Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
So that's why we had all those posters up there. It was literally, we were going to go through everything. We will go through all of it and make sure that that our guys knew all of it. And then, you know, a lot of times we go into the game and it's like, I just don't know how the other team's going to score. Like, we've got it all figured out. So,
hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender. And today's episode is brought to you in part by one of our favorite sponsors, Connor Sports. Connor Sports is a world leader in sports services, the official floor, the Final Four, and the Olympics. They do everything from high school gyms and rec centers all the way to NBA team floors. Visit ConnorSports.com for more information on their floors. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit RisingCoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that you won't see posted anywhere else. Please visit risingcoaches.com to learn more and become a member today. So today's special guest, Tanner Bronson, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga assistant coach. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. What do you have going on today? I know you just got a practice, busy day already.
Oh, yeah. We had practice this morning. We're lucky this semester we got the early morning block, so we get 10 a.m. and then came in here to come sit down and chat with you a little bit.
There you go. Well, I appreciate you taking the time, especially as you guys are getting started. I know you guys already had a scrimmage and you're about to play another exhibition tomorrow, but you know, you guys got a pretty good team this year. I'm sure you're excited about that. I think you were preseason favorites in the league. Tell us just a little bit about your group and then you kind of dive into your background of kind of how you got to where you are and where you're at now at Chattanooga.
Yeah, I mean, we got picked first in the SoCon this year, and it's, I mean, in the history of the SoCon, you know, the last 3-4 years, I mean, the league has just gotten better and better and better. So that's an honor, but we still haven't won any championships yet. So, I mean, preseason's great, but we all know what that means. Nothing at the end of the year. But our group, you know, the one thing we have going for us is we're old. You know, our average age is 22 and a half years old on our roster. We have like 5 graduates and 3 more by the end of the year this year. So one of the oldest teams probably in the history of college basketball, I would imagine. And we got 2 really good guards back. We've added some good pieces down low. On a team that, you know, did well last year. We started well. We were 9-0, and like most teams and programs around the country, COVID kind of hit us here and there, and some teams harder than others. I don't think we got hit the hardest, but we got hit like a lot of people, and so, you know, we didn't finish how we like, so we're kind of excited to get in there and kind of see what we can do and try to represent the league, which has been very challenging. So yeah, we're very excited about this group. I know everybody at this time of year, you're going through scrimmages, exhibitions. How good are we going to be? What does it look like? Finally get to play somebody else. For us, you know, that's been kind of fun to see this group, how they've handled every situation and try to prepare as we go into to a unique second season kind of post COVID to see what it looks like.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I'm wishing you guys luck. We'll be following. You got 2 of my guys on your team this year. So hopefully they perform well for you and help you win a championship. Go ahead, take us back to your background. I know you kind of started at Wisconsin, or maybe talk about your high school days and into how you got to where you are. You've had multiple stops, so kind of walk us through your background.
Yeah, you know, I'm from Southern Milwaukee. I went to Nicolet High School. Definitely not even close to the best player that came out of that school. I had a couple of teammates in high school that one played at Stanford, at Dan Groenfeld, and one Joe Tucker, who played at Bradley and then went to Milwaukee when they went to the Sweet 16. So not even one of the best 12 on my high school team. But, you know, I was fortunate. You know, I went to Wisconsin and was able to kind of be a manager I wanted to walk on, like a lot of guys do. You know, thought I was probably better than I actually was. And had the opportunity to be a manager, and I always wanted to coach. So it was whatever avenue I could take to kind of start that journey. And I knew playing was a big piece of it. And so when I found out as a manager, you know, I wanted to be for a great program. I always, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, wanting to be a part of Wisconsin. Bo Ryan was the coach, you know, Dick Bennett previously, what he had kind of started, you know, in the right before Coach Ryan got there. And so then I was able to go from manager to walk on. The funny story on that is it's because Devin Harris went pro early that we traded Devin Harris for me, essentially. One of the other walk-ons got a scout. Yeah, Wisconsin got the raw deal on that one, I could tell you that. So then that's how I ended up, you know, on the roster and earned a scholarship after that. And I think the best thing for me was the fact that I wanted to be a coach. I kind of, even as a player, always viewed it as a coach because I wasn't that talented, couldn't outjump anyone on the team. Athletically, I was inferior to just about everybody we played. So I got to kind of see it as I was playing it, and that kind of helped me in my journey. And I think, you know, some of the coaches that I played for could recognize that I could maybe see some things as a coach as opposed to a player. So that kind of started my journey there as a coach. And then after, you know, my 4 years of playing there, you know, we lose my senior year to Steph Curry and Davidson in the Sweet 16. And then I get into the profession, and I start off in the G League up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota with the Sky Force, which was a tremendous experience. You know, at the time, they only had one assistant coach and a head coach. It's changed quite a bit since almost 15 years ago, I guess. You know, there's more coaches now. They have more player personnel people. And so I had a chance to do everything right out the gate. You know, player development. I was in all the coaches' meetings. There's only three of us, you know. So some of those discussions and game situations and managing a bunch of personnel was really beneficial for me. So I was there 3 years and then went to St. Louis University. Coach Rick Majerus hired me my first year to be a GA. And I've known him a long time, knew how great of a coach he was, clearly, and just kind of wanted to be a part of really good coaching, have a chance to get better. With that, St. Louis for 5 years, we went to three NCAA tournaments and had a really some really, really good teams, some really good players there. You know, it got let go after our fifth year, went out to UNLV for a season with Marvin Menzies, and then after 1 year came here with Coach Paris, been here. This is going on our fifth year here as an assistant coach. So bounce around a little bit, I guess, like a lot of coaches. And so my journey's kind of been all over the place.
Yeah, you've been very fortunate. You've been in a lot of different unique venues around the country, and let alone basketball coaching jobs. And, you know, it's really awesome for you to have those experiences. Now, I'm going to touch on a couple of your stories. So we have a lot of, like, mutual contacts throughout the years, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Marvin Menzies, he worked with Joe Esposito, who's with us in Minnesota.
You know, yeah.
Marvelous, and talked to Marvin regularly. He helped me with a couple of kids in the past. And then your stop at St. Louis. I was at West Plains. I actually stopped, and you guys were very – you even let me into, like, a coach's meeting. I came in, I visited, saw the venue, and I remember that vaguely. I remember all of the posters and the plays that you guys had around your office and things like that. And then you're actually one of the reasons why I'm in college basketball. So – without knowing, I knew I wanted to be a coach and knew I wanted to get in college. But again, you know, I'm a suburban, you know, white kid from Wisconsin, and I didn't really have that opportunity. I'm not very tall in stature. And, you know, I was watching a Wisconsin game, and they had a little story on you. And that was my senior year in high school. And I realized what a manager was. I didn't even know what it was. And I did the same thing at Minnesota. So I went to be a manager. I kind of wanted to play, but I just, you know, never got that opportunity. But from day one, when I got there, you know, you contributed to my journey in coaching. And so I'm very grateful for you. You don't even know that necessarily.
Man, but I appreciate
you know,
that.
I've told you the story before, but like,
man, I'm thankful
without you,
that.
my journey is not the same. I'm probably in elementary education and I'm a high school basketball coach somewhere in the Midwest. So that would probably have been my journey if it weren't for you and you didn't even know it. So, well, tell us a little bit about that manager situation. So like there are some guys out there that are managers become coaches, and there's guys that were players and become coaches. And, you know, what's your take on that? Do you think that matters? Do you think playing matters? Do you think just having your name, on a roster compared to being a student assistant or a GA, plays into that?
You know, I don't think it matters as if you can be a good coach, right? I think that's the thing, that if you love coaching and you love doing it, it doesn't matter whether you played or not, right? I mean, it's an important piece a lot of times to get yourself in the door that's the harder part, right? It's not whether you're capable of being a good coach, whether you're not. It's people sometimes question, well, he hasn't played. Does he really understand that? I think, you know, your road is tougher on what you have to prove. And I think, you know, that's what makes it challenging is, you know, your connections, you know, a lot of people. And I think young people in the profession, they end up getting a label put on them. Oh, he's just an ops guy. He's just a video guy. He's this, he's that. So being able to do that role really well and also kind of show what you can do in the times that you're given, right? You have to, sometimes you just have to be ready for your opportunity. And when it comes, maybe you're, oh man, he knows this scout, or, you know, he noticed this on the floor. We're not doing this on his footwork, you know, and just study it. Like if you love it that much, study it, know it, and be ready for it. I think that's probably the bigger piece on being a manager versus a player. You know, players, people remember how you play or how you think the game, they've seen you. So there's kind of an advantage to that. And then as a manager, you know, you have a completely different road. You view it always almost as a coach, which is beneficial. And then you kind of have to show that you probably understand it from a player's perspective some when you're in your communication with your group and your players and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Now talk us through a little bit about your journey. You went from the G League and then you went to St. Louis. Talk about a little bit of, you know, a lot of people don't have that, the college and the quote unquote professional experience.
Yeah.
Be able to do both. Tell us a little bit about, you know, obviously it was a decent time ago, but tell us the difference in the approach basically with pros and college and, you know, some of the things you like there and that you don't like as much now in the college game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was interesting for me being a pro coach, right? And I'm coaching guys that are 10 years older than me. I mean, think of how infrequently that happens to anyone in coaching, right? Is to coach someone that's 10 years older than you. So it's more like, you know, understandings. Like the one thing you learn with pro guys is they've seen a lot. They've been through a lot. It's a respect factor for, like, they need to know that you get it almost more as an equal. You know, a lot of times we think of coaches because when you have peewee coaching, right, you've got this person that has this knowledge of basketball or baseball or whatever, and they're teaching little kids how to do the very basics, right? So there's kind of this hierarchy. I think at the pro level, it's more like communication and trying to get on the same page, whatever you have to do to kind of do that. And a lot of it comes through just more of a, hey, I know you've been through it. You've been through this pro team. You've been through to multiple countries or run through multiple coaches, right? So you know, hey, when we iced it on this team, it was a certain way. When we played a ball screen, like a low flat hedge, it's this. So I think it was just more of the communication part when you talk about pros. Whereas you get college, you know, college players, you know, they're coming in and the pace of the game is so different. They're going from a change in a level where, you know, what worked certainly will not work unless they adjust to the game. And, you know, you're almost having to teach fundamentals more. And it's more like a, hey, I have had this much experience. You guys are just entering this for the first time. We kind of have to get you caught up. And so it's a little bit more, I think in college coaching, we obsess over control as college coaches. And I think in the pro game, it's actually the opposite. You try to give control to your players as much as possible. So that's kind of the biggest thing for me having done pro versus college. I think the benefit is, you know, with pros, it's guys have to get the end result done, or they're going to get cut probably, or they're not going to get paid. And in college, you've made an investment over a long term to kind of work with and develop, and you believe in what they're capable of. And so it's more of a teaching, growing together, learning type scenario. And so that's kind of fun. And then clearly the biggest difference is, you know, recruiting. You know, in the pros, you get whoever shows up, whoever they have signed. And in college, you get to choose. You get to go out and really do your homework and try to figure out who's best for you and what kind of culture you want to put out there. And it's also on you if it doesn't work, you know, with the personnel stuff.
Yeah, you get to pick your players. It's always a little bit nicer with that.
Yeah.
You talk a little bit about something along the lines of patience. You know, you coaching older guys right now and you know, the tenure in college basketball is about 3.5 years for a head coach. And you've been at a program now for 5, and you guys have built it and sustained it, and your behaviors have come before your success, and it's, you know, it's coming. Tell us a little bit about how, you know, coaching a lot of guys that came from different programs, you know, you talk about grad guys and older and getting older.
Yeah.
With the patience level of, you know, hey, are you guys going to continue that trend? Do you want to take a couple high school kids and dealing with the portal? How are you guys doing it at a good mid-major?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I think the biggest thing in college basketball is it's kind of gone through a transformation. You know, it used to be you definitely can have a big group of freshmen and work them through the end game as a senior, and what is that product going to look like, right? I think now, you know, with the way the transfer portal set up and just how, you know, easily it is to move if success doesn't happen for you and things like that, I think you kind of have to change your approach on how you handle players. It's not that you give less accountability. It's you have to give almost more freedom in a way to – you might have had specific rules on how you taught your offense or your defense that take years to develop. Well, you might have to kind of go back on some of those things and see what's the best way to get a group of 10 guys that might be – they haven't played together, and we have 4 months before we play a game. We got to get them ready. So is it starting from the beginning knowing that it's going to be in February, or do you kind of let them play it out and kind of give them some generic or general rules and try to work through that? And I think what we've found here is, you know, your team is very different year to year, and kind of do the latter. Find ways to make this group as good together and build the chemistry as good as you can because you have a shorter time than trying to, you know, hammer the system throughout that by year three, the system's going to crush it. Right. And I think that's, you know, when you're going to take older guys, I think you have to do that. I think that it's harder, and you're only going to get guys for a year or two. And I think, you know, junior college has been doing that a long time. And there's a lot, you know, to be said for managing all that, because there's a lot of different people every year. And I think, you know, the Division I college basketball is having the same thing that they're having to learn. Either you're going to kind of go with this, or it's going to kind of catch you. And I think that's learning to adjust is a big part of it.
Yeah, definitely. Just finding ways to navigate it all, even from the backwards side. So us on the JUCO level, you know, our recruitment for our guys has been different the last 2 years than it's been any other year. And it's going to continue in that trend because, you know, right now we still got guys with 3 years left, but my freshmen have 3 years left, but my sophomores also have 3 years left. And it's kind of interesting that, you know, recruiting kids that, and a normal year probably would sign Division I out of high school, and now I'm recruiting those kids that would go prep or go Division I. Now they're going the JUCO route, and there's just not enough spots. It's going to be interesting to see how the next 3 to 5 years of college basketball kind of pan out, especially with breaking away with those conferences and stuff with the Power Five. We'll see how it all shakes up.
Yeah, definitely.
I talked about this briefly. So when you worked with Coach Majerus, when you were at St. Louis, and I talked about your scouting. I had never seen that before. Walk us through, you know, what was it? What am I talking about? You know, share with us what those posters were all over the office.
Oh, it almost brings back nightmares. You know, Coach Majerus, like, you know, I had the opportunity to work with two Hall of Famers in Rick Majerus and Bo Ryan. And, you know, the one thing that they had in common was attention to detail, like their detail on whatever it was, their system was, however they were going to approach things, however they were going to teach things, right? And Coach Majerus was meticulous at everything that was done. Like, there was never an opportunity to have any slippage. You know, I joke with guys when they ask, like, what was it like to work with Coach Majerus? Well, it was like a guy's getting around in the post and his feet were at 90 degrees and they needed to be at 93 degrees. Well, you got to get out and you're running. Like, it was that detailed. It was instant. It was all the time and it was relentless. And one of the things is the scouting. You know, he wanted every detail to have every bit of information he possibly could about the other team and then build a game plan from that. So it could change game to game. Our ball screen coverage could change. some of our denials and things like that would change. So around the entire office, we would have every single play up on the wall. So it'd be drawn up. We'd have to draw it all up. And it was also in his office. We would do it because the coaches had to have, when we met, it would be like, but what about this play? Or what about that play? When we're talking about, hey, Biggs, you need to sit back and you need to help because they could run this or that. And then you can cover both of them, you know? And so we ended up doing that, and we would put it together, and then coach would be able to go through everything with the guys. Like, all right, I need call out, you know, our foreman, where are you supposed to be on this play and why, you know? And he'd go through, and then he'd call out our point guard. Where's our pickup point on this? And so, you know, I think the level of accountability was so high and the detail was so high. That was just his way of doing it. And our guys just embraced it tremendously, but it's also was challenging. You know, a lot of people ask, like, how do you get your players to do this? Well, he was a unique individual. Like, he could get their attention, you know, in a way that they better be ready to answer the questions. And so that's why we had all those posters up there. It was literally, we were going to go through everything. We will go through all of it and make sure that our guys knew all of it. And then, you know, a lot of times we go into the game and it's like, I just don't know how the other team's going to score. Like, we've got it all figured out. So that's where the big post-it notes came from. And that's where we spent a lot of time, many hours drawing up plays on these big post-it notes that we hung up in the office in the locker room.
Sounds like you did a little bit of double work. You give it to them, and then you also had to draw it on the big poster. So
yeah,
it probably helped you learn. You know, one thing that I would say, and I tell young coaches all the time, is when you're an assistant, or, you know, especially at my level, my year as an assistant, we had 28 games. Well, I did 27 of the 28 scouts, and it really helped me understand basketball. And you'd have 2 or 3 days to watch 6-7 games and get everything done and be detailed with it. And I worked for a very detailed guy, and Coach Fox, who was at Davidson when he got you guys, but he was very detailed in their scouting. And, you know, I learned a lot from him and that scouting purposes. I'm going to take a little bit of a flip here. You've been very fortunate. You've lived in some really cool cities, unique cities. You grew up in Milwaukee. You've been in Madison, Wisconsin, which is a hidden gem. Most people don't know about that. Sioux Falls is another hidden gem. St. Louis, Missouri, Vegas, obviously, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So we talk about in coaching a lot work-life balance. You have a family, and you have twins at home, I know. Tell us a little bit about being a father, living in good cities. You know, you haven't lived in Summit, Mississippi, or little towns or different places like that. But talk to us a little bit about, you know, your journeys through it, and, you know, your work-life balance and having twins and what that's like.
Yeah, you know, I've been fortunate at the places that I've lived. You know, not every college and every town is as nice as, you know, St. Louis, Las Vegas, Chattanooga. I mean, right, Madison, Wisconsin. Like, that's a pretty good group of cities, you know, that you can live in. And then so we've been very fortunate. And then my boys have been, you know, they're born in Las Vegas, and I literally had just gotten the job, and then they got born, then they were born, and then we flew back here to Chattanooga. So they've basically been in Chattanooga their whole life. And, you know, it's been really great for us, because it's a very, you know, the city's great, the community's great, you know, UTC and UT Chattanooga, like the staff here and just how helpful people are. And then being in a city that has so much, if anyone hasn't been to Chattanooga, I recommend it. It's a gorgeous place. But I think then the other part is, like you said, the family, you know, coaching, you know, family life balance is so hard in coaching. I think it's one of the hardest things to figure out, because there's no real right answer to it, you know, but it's very, very important to me that I'm a good dad and a good husband. And I think no matter what decision I choose to make, I feel like those things have to be at the forefront for me. And forever, it's not, you know, not everybody has a family in coaching. Not everybody has that. But, you know, we have a lot of demands as to getting scouting reports done and practice times and weekends and travel and recruiting and a variety of things. I think the biggest thing is to be able to, like, manage with your family what you can and can't do, first off, and have real conversations about that. And then the other part is, you know, you need to spend your time wisely if you want to be a good dad and a good husband and a good coach. I think that's really the biggest part for me, is just being able to prioritize and manage when I can, right? You know, it's late nights after, you know, the kids go to bed, or, you know, you're figuring out when you can pull some minutes here or there. But I think, you know, I've used this term with other coaches in general. It's just like, we need a lot more good fathers than we need good coaches. And so I try to live that. And every once in a while you start dipping away because you get so involved in the game and our competitive spirit comes out. And then it's like, all right, let's just take a deep breath and let's get back to the things that matter, and also being able to find that balance, right? And then having a partner that understands what a coach's wife is, you know, that's a huge thing. And I'm very, very fortunate for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's good, you know, not every good man, there's a good woman too. And
yeah,
that's awesome. And being present, you know, that would be the one thing I'd add to what you're saying, is be where your feet are. I know you're big on that, but being physically present with wherever you are. If you're at work, you're giving your all. You're at, you know, recruiting, you're giving your all. You're at home, you're with your individual player meetings, you know, everybody that you're with, you're completely present and there, not preoccupied doing multiple different things. And it goes a long way for all those coaches, especially with the balance of family.
And you know how it is too. Like sometimes you get that call and you're dropping your daughter off, right? And you're like, I don't know if I should take it or not. The call will be okay. You can call back, right? Yeah. I think sometimes we're like, we're such now people as coaches, you know, just by the way it is. Sometimes it's, hey, it's okay. We'll talk in 20 minutes. And I think the people that understand.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the now. I know you're big on the 2 feet in, like I said, but you know, your coaching tree, obviously Bo Ryan's retired and Rick Majerus, you know, deceased, and you know, Marvin Menzies currently out of the profession, and your work for the guy that you have now. So talk about, you know, how you're going to continue to grow, and you're in a really good situation here, and how can you prepare yourself to be a head coach and down the road, and, you know, doing a good job there. And what would you tell other young guys that, you know, are still trying to grow and climb and do this profession?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is do your best in the job you have now. Worry about the job you have right now and do it really well. And I think it gets lost a lot. You know, we constantly want to do better, get the next better job and the next best job, and try to climb to be, you know, head coach or whatever the situation may be for you. And I think it gets lost on the actual job you're doing sometimes. You're just putting more effort into that than you are the other stuff. That doesn't mean you don't, you know, network and get a chance to talk to a lot of people in the profession and keep your references, you know, calling on them and make sure that that's good. But if your focus is on anything but the job you have and the person you're working for, I think it's not going to work out for you, whether it's now, whether it's your next job, whatever the situation is, you'll end up with that reputation will follow you, you know? And I think you can do it that way at times, but I just feel like it's always kind of, I've seen a lot of people where it hit them at one point because that's constantly what they're worried about. And, you know, working here for Lamont Paris, you know, it's been great for me because, you know, I've been able to focus on Chattanooga basketball and since we've been here. And I think that's really helped our whole program. And we have a staff like that, hey, how do we make this thing better? It's not to say that people don't have their own thoughts and their own, you know, their own dreams in coaching. I think you have to be prepared. And when you have extra time, maybe you think about it, maybe you, you know, write down some notes and keep some of those thoughts there. But at the same time, you're not getting the next job if you're not good in the one you have. Your best references are going to be the people you work for currently. And so I just think that's been my whole thing in coaching. And it's also creates a lot less stress for you. You know, when you're thinking about whatever it could be or couldn't be, I think coaches, you know, we act on things like, but if we don't do this, then we're going to, you know, if we lose this many games, then we're going to be in this situation. If we win this many games, we can go to this. It's not fair to your players. It's not fair to the coaches and the program you represent. So that's always just been my personal philosophy. And, you know, it's worked out pretty well for me to this point. So I'm pretty, pretty thankful. Hopefully it continues to be that way.
For sure. Yeah. Just investing that time and being present again, you know, not thinking, you got to be ahead in terms of your thinking, but you can't live in the future. You got to live in your presence and you can't change the past. You can only influence the future by what you do today. And you live by that. you work for some really, really good people, and you've had some unique experiences across basketball. Tell us, you know, what's the one lesson that's kind of taken you the longest to learn through either the game or through coaching, or that you've kind of taken through life that you would share with other people?
Man, that's a good question. You know, I think being really genuine, I think it sounds simple, and I think we all believe that we can be, that we're being genuine, right? But I think as a coach, and one of the things that impacted me was my kids being born. And it was a reality check for me, in the fact that I always thought I was being genuine. I tried to say the right things and do the right things, but I didn't necessarily feel the right things. Like, I didn't actually feel it. And I think when I had kids, that was an eye opener for me, that, you know, as I look at my players and the teams I was coaching, I enjoyed a lot of the guys I was around, but I could have done more for them. And I felt like I was missing some of that. And it wasn't that, hey, I, like everybody, you know, I'll take the guys out to lunch, we'll talk about their families and get to know them well. I was always doing that, but like, I viewed it now as a parent. Like, I was an extension of their parents, and I know what their parents are feeling because I know what it's like as a parent. So I think that genuine piece, you know, it sounds almost terrible because it's like, were you not genuine before? It's not that I wasn't genuine, but I can actually feel, like, I feel the difference. Like, I, you know, we've had some kids go through some tough times, and I can really feel for them, and I do. And that's really way, way, way more important. And I think as coaches, we say that to all other coaches. It's the thing we always say, care about your players, show that you care. Like, you know, it's about the people. But I think a lot of times it's words and it's not genuine action. And I feel that has changed for me, you know, significantly probably in the last 5 or 6 years, and getting a chance to kind of go through my experiences. You know, when I was at St. Louis, I got promoted to assistant coach after 1 year. And now I'm an assistant coach in a team that's a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament, a 5 seed in the NCAA. Things were going great, you know, and, you know, I thought I had everything figured out. You never do, first of all. And I think part of going through the experience of not being successful there the last couple of years, you know, being let go and then moving on, I think there was a lot of learning that I had to do, and kind of inward looking to be like, what could I have done better? And I think there was a variety of things, but specifically, I think the genuine, just be who you are and care about the people you're working with and for. And I think that makes a big, big difference.
Yeah. That level of care, and especially you as in the assistant role. So having been an assistant, also being now a head coach, that level of care. And then when you become the head coach, you care even more. And then when you become a parent, like you said, the level of care and genuineness and present and doing everything the right way, and not, you know, just being present, doing things the right way, that level of care, like, no one can compete with that. And if you're in it for the right reasons, this business can really give back to you in a humbling way.
And you think of how many of your former players contact you, I mean, that maybe it was 4 years ago, 3 years ago, right, that are like, you have a connection with this. Basketball is great, but it's the reality is they knew you cared about them, and that's why they're reaching out. Hey, I have a kid. I'm getting married. I'm whatever. I mean, it's a great thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's you know, those are the rewarding things that come back. And, you know, you get both ends of it. You get the good and the bad of it then moving forward. But, yeah, I got a FaceTime call the other day from one of our guys from App, and he thought his career was over. He had a little stint in the G League and in the Summer League, and then he went to Russia and didn't play a lot, and then COVID hit. So he's kind of out of the thing, and he's got a FaceTime. He FaceTimed me, and he's going to Finland. And just the look on his face, like the fact that he wanted to A, call me, and then B, share that with me, it makes you feel good. And,
yeah, that's awesome.
It's a good feeling. So we got two more questions for you. So the next one I'm going to ask you is, give us one thing that you like truly believe in that others may think is weird. So
that I truly believe in that others think is weird.
Yep.
Man, that is a tough question. So like in reference to just anything in coaching,
it doesn't have to be coaching. It could be life. It could be, give us something that you do that may be weird that other people don't understand, or you like genuinely believe in. So you take a cold shower every morning. You just do something weird, something different, uncommon.
Man, I'd probably have to ask my wife for this one. She's probably got a whole list.
Yep.
I would say a thing that I do that's weird. Man, I may have to come back to that one.
All right. Well,
I got to think that one through. That's a good question.
There you go. Tough question. I always ask tough questions. So the last one we'll kind of compete, you know, finish with. You talked a little bit about getting into coaching and things like that. What would be like a 24-hour challenge that you would give someone that's listening to podcasts, not just basketball life, moving on, just things that, you know, you talked about being genuine, but what's something that we can really focus our attention on over the next 24 hours that we can really focus on and make our lives better or other people's lives better?
Yeah, I'd say show your appreciation. Like, for me, appreciate the people that have helped you get to where you're at. Like, none of us are in even the position we're in, even if it's we think we should be in a better position or whatever the case is. If you're listening to this, you're probably in coaching and wanting to improve and do better. Appreciate those that have helped you. I think that's such a big thing, and you can show your appreciation in a lot of different ways. But like, call somebody for no reason. Call your people that have helped you, that you can just say, hey, just wanted to check in on you and see how you're doing. I'm very thankful for what it is that you've done for me. I think that would be the next 24 hours. I would say everybody should do that. You know, I try to do it frequently. I constantly am writing down people and calls that I want to make sure that like those people know like how much they mean to me and what they were able to do so that I can do what I love. And hopefully then I can be that person for the next individual that, you know, is looking for a job or needs help with any sort of issue whatsoever. So that would be my one thing is just show your appreciation.
That's great. Yeah. Gratitude goes a long way. And we do a grateful walk every day before practice. You know, we get it with our group and we take one lap around our gym and think about what we're appreciative for and grateful for. And
yeah, that's great.
You know, why that purpose is, goes a long way. And going off what you just said with the cell phone thing and like going through your phone and stuff, I go cell phone roulette when I go recruiting. So I'll just go through my contact book and I'll just spin down the thing and I'll see where it goes. And I'll pick one of those 5-6 people that show up in that list and give them a shout or text them something nice. And it goes a long way. But I appreciate you coming on today, taking the time. I know you're busy. You guys got a full schedule coming up and wishing you guys the best of luck. Hopefully you can get that SoCon championship and have a good season and keep touching lives and impacting others the way that you've done and be genuine and keep working hard.
Well, it's an honor to be on the podcast, and I appreciate you, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
No problem.